I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. Haiti is in the throes of several crises. The president was assassinated in July. The country was hit by a 7.2 magnitude earthquake and then Tropical Storm Grace in August, and is being terrorized by kidnappers targeting Haitians of all walks of life. This past weekend, 16 American missionaries and one Canadian were kidnapped by a local gang while visiting an orphanage. Meanwhile, an estimated 15,000 Haitian migrants sheltered under a bridge in Del Rio, Texas last month, asking for asylum. Some were allowed to apply, some were forced back into Mexico, and some were deported to Haiti. We begin with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Gary Pierre-Pierre. He is founder and publisher of the Haitian Times. And Gary Pierre-Pierre, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
A pleasure to have you as well. As much as there are so many serious and worrisome things to talk about, let me just quote something that you wrote in the Haitian Times on Friday. This was before the foreign missionaries were kidnapped. You wrote, "The gang situation is growing more out of control by the day. The rash of kidnappings continues unabated. Churches, homes, sidewalks, nothing is off limits. People are worrying, and those who can leave the country have done so in droves. The situation is untenable." Beginning with the kidnaps, what is behind this growing rash of kidnappings?
Well, the kidnappings are a way for these gangs to acquire money, and it's been very lucrative. What I was talking about in that piece was about friends of mine and colleagues of mine who've been kidnapped. And I see the anguish and the agony of Haitian Americans who have to come up with, you know, a lot of money so they could free their relatives and stuff. And it was really bothersome. And the reality is that it speaks to the failure of the state not to be able to deal with these gangs who seem to be more powerful than the police. And so that's what I was talking about there, you know, the frustration that people in Haiti were articulating. And I was seeing what was happening here in the United States among my all leaders and friends and all of that. And it was very disheartening. And I don't write this lightly, and it pains me to write these things. But sure. At the same time, as a journalist, we owe it to our readers to give them a sense of what's really happening on the ground. And we did. And lo and behold, the next day, 16 Americans and a Canadian, including children, by the way, were abducted by these gangs.
Who is this gang? I'm not sure I'm going to pronounce it correctly. What I read was 400 Mawozo. What do we know about this gang who are alleged to have kidnapped these foreign missionaries?
Well, one of their biggest MO is just that, the way they abduct their victims. They seem to have large groups. The thinking is that when you get a large group, that means more money that they can get from rent some money. And so that's one of the MO that separates them from the other gangs who abduct individuals. They also operate out of the northeast corridor of the capital city. So, you know, Port-au-Prince is surrounded by water and mountain, and then there are two arteries to get out of it, one from the south and the other one to the north. And both of these crossroads are controlled by gangs. So basically, trying to get in and out of Port-au-Prince, you're risking your life. And so the police still cannot bring these gangs under control after almost 3 years. So that's how long this has been going on.
Well, let me pick up on that. And I mentioned in my introduction that the president was assassinated in July, but you're saying this all predates that. You talk about the state. What is the government? Who is running Haiti these days? And maybe it's the gangs.
Nominally, I mean, you're not far from the truth, and I'll give you an anecdote that happened on Sunday, okay? So basically, yeah, this predates the assassination. This gang situation has been out of control since 2018, okay? And so they've been getting more and more emboldened. And on Sunday, the prime minister was heading to the tomb of the founder of Haiti, Jean-Jacques Dessalines. That was the first president. And so this has been a routine thing for presidents and prime ministers to just go and lay a wreath, okay? Now, across there, that northern corridor I was talking about, is controlled by this gang 400 miles up. And so the government paid them some money to lay off, do not cause any trouble. And so despite that, they had to flee. They couldn't go and continue to the location to lay the wreath. And so one of the gang leaders, Reston White, went and laid the wreath. So this is a strong method telling us who's in charge. So your point that the gangs are in charge is very unfair, actually, because that's what's happening now in Haiti.
Are you afraid to be on the street?
Well, yes, I was there in January, and that was the worst trip. I've been coming to Haiti for 30 years, and whenever people, I'm the guy who comes in, I'm like the firefighter. When anybody's running out, I'm running in, I'm going in. And this time, I was really uncomfortable. I fear for my life for the first time ever being in Haiti, and I haven't been back since January.
You mentioned that they kidnap people for ransom, for money. This is kind of a basic question. Money for what?
To enrich themselves.
To enrich themselves?
Yes. I mean, they're not doing any social work. And again, and in the slums that they control, they're not, the lives of people are not getting better. They're not building a hospital. It's just this power grab, money grab and power grab for no particular purpose, but to enrich themselves and for us to be talking about them.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, should we not be talking about them?
Well, but the conundrum is that it's true.
You know what? I hate to say this, Gary. We're going to try to call you back. You are in Haiti, and we want to get a better phone line. It's important to hear what you have to say. Let me just make sure that listeners know what we're talking about. We are talking about Haiti, talking with Gary Pierre-Pierre. He's founder and publisher of the Haitian Times, and we wanted to talk to him directly to help us understand what is going on inside of Haiti. I have, though, here with me, sitting across from me, is Steve Paul. He's a Pennsylvania State Director at State Innovation Exchange, also Haitian American Voice Board member, came to the United States from Haiti when he was 9 or 10 years old and has been living in Philadelphia. And Steve Paul, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. I know you were listening to Gary Pierre-Pierre describing essentially the country where you grew up. You have family in Haiti?
Yeah, I actually still have most of the family from my mother's side are in Haiti. So my two uncles who I grew up with and sort of raised me, and my nieces and my nephew.
And are they safe from what you know?
Yeah, it was interesting listening to the previous speaker talk about, like, you know, the gangs controlling Port-au-Prince corridor. So my uncle, when the most recent earthquake hit and then the hurricane, I was able to raise some money through just friends and family here to send him some money so he could move from his current house, was impacted by the earthquake and was really flooded. He actually told me he couldn't leave his house yet. He couldn't leave his neighborhood yet. Mm-hmm. Had to wait about a week and pick the right day to actually move. The plan was
because
to
of
move,
safety?
Because of safety, because of the gangs, yeah.
I believe we have Gary Pierre-Pierre back. And Gary, do we have you? Yeah, it's just, we really wanted you on, and we are dependent on phone lines, so I will keep my fingers crossed as we go. Let me just ask you a couple of more follow-up questions, and you've written, as you say, about Haiti for decades now. Are these gangs, in a sense, replacing the corrupt elite that have run Haiti for so many years?
Well, that's what I did think to. I wouldn't say they have gotten to the front where they are. I mean, they're still hiding, they're still underground, but they are becoming bolder and bolder, and they're taking moves that you can interpret as such, as you mentioned, that they want to replace the power structure, and that is dangerous. Gangs shouldn't, they're criminals, they should be behind bars. People are kidnapping folks or committing all acts, rape, broad daylight, kidnappings, and you name it, they're behind it. And so, you know, any state cannot be run by a lawless group of people.
Do we know, or does anyone in Haiti know, or is there an investigation into who assassinated the president in July?
That investigation has been mired in controversy. The Prime Minister, Ariel Henry, fired the prosecutor in Haiti, who is a judge. because the prosecutor had accused him of being complicit in the assassination, and the new judge hasn't been able to get very far. Moise's wife, the president Jovenel Moise, who was assassinated in July, his wife went back to Haiti to testify in front of the judge, and she accused Henri of complicity and her husband's murder. So, but all of this without any evidence. And so we don't know where this investigation is. And like most other investigations in Haiti, the investigation continues. There's a word in French, l'enquête se poursuit. So basically, it's a way to say it's not going to go anywhere.
So what do you see as the future for Haiti?
Haitian Americans who really care or passionate, who can really help turn the country around. Right now, people are living in droves, as I mentioned in the article that you quoted earlier. If you go to the Dominican Republic, most Haitian middle class have left and gone to the Dominican Republic. Those who have visas in the U.S. or some of whom are Haitian Americans, dual citizenship, they've left Haiti and come back to the United States and trying to wait this out. And so I think there's a basic minimum that the state needs to do to take care of this cancer in the society. And then there isn't sort of like a lack of ability. I mean, you look at what Haitians have been able to accomplish outside of Haiti, it's remarkable compared to the Haiti. It's a problem with Haitian, problem with the system. And once we can really disrupt the system and make it as fair as any society can be, and I think, you know, you can see change coming to Haiti, but it's going to be a long process. And so that's where my hope lies, frankly, but right now, because Haiti does not provide much for its citizens right now.
We're almost up on a break here, and let me turn back to you, Steve Paul. He talks about the important role that Haitian Americans play in the future of Haiti. How do you see that?
No, I absolutely agree. You know, most of us, a significant amount of us, we come to this country with the hopes of, like, supporting our family, right? A significant amount of, I think, like, almost like over $1 billion is sent to Haiti from folks here who are working and taking care of family. So I do think there's a significant role for us to play, both economically, but also, as you mentioned, there's also a role for us to go back home to, excuse me, to help develop Haiti and to help push Haiti forward in the right direction in the future. I will say, though, you know, a lot of us who grew up in this country, who've come here when we were young, our parents always often tell us, you know, because of the trauma they faced, the way they fled Haiti, not to go back to Haiti. Uh-huh. So there's always that battle. I know for me personally, I haven't been to Haiti. I left Haiti when I was 9. I went back for my mom's funeral when I was 16, and I didn't go back until in my 30s. Partly because my parents would tell me, if you go to Haiti, you will get kidnapped. There's nothing for you in Haiti. There's nothing but tragedy. So we have to kind of fight that kind of the narrative and actually go back home and fix the issue.
I want to pick up on that after this very short break. And yes, on Radio Times today, we're talking about Haiti, Haiti and America. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. And we're talking about Haiti today on the show. Gary Pierre-Pierre, founder and publisher of the Haitian Times, has been telling us about the crisis of kidnappings and violence and lawlessness in that country in recent years. U.S. and Haitian officials are working to free the Christian missionaries kidnapped over the weekend. Last month in this country, thousands of Haitians were deported back to their country after being apprehended in Del Rio, Texas. Some were allowed to stay, and some Haitians living in the U.S. can remain because of the extension of something called Temporary Protected Status, or TPS. The treatment of Haitians by the U.S. government has raised a host of questions about race and racism. The New York Times reported today that black migrants face higher deportation rates than other races and are more often placed in solitary confinement. And as I said, Steve Paul is with us here in our Philadelphia studio, Pennsylvania State Director at State Innovation Exchange and Haitian American Voice Board Member. Joining us now is Joanne Lewis. She's a nurse practitioner and founder of Dr. Joanne Lewis Foundation. And nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you so very much for having me.
You're very welcome. I want to go back to you, Steve Paul, because you mentioned the fact that your parents and other adults who left Haiti or fled Haiti didn't want their children to go back. You went back for your wedding, for your honeymoon.
Yeah, I did. For me, it was really important that my wife got to see where I was born and where I was raised. And so, you know, after we got married 2 years ago, we decided to spend our honeymoon in Cap Haitien, which is about 5 hours from where I was born in Port-au-Prince. But it was, you know, it was kind of bizarre. So I was born in the 1980s in Haiti in Port-au-Prince. And for, you know, for your viewers who are listening, about, I would say, 1990, the beginning of 91, Haiti broke out into a civil war, and that civil war lasted from 91 to 95. So as a child, you know, I saw things that no kid should ever have to witness, right? Dead bodies on the way to school,
wow.
Seeing people get shot and killed, and of course, eventually, tanks and helicopters when the Americans eventually invaded. And so a lot of that trauma has stayed with me, and similarly for my dad and my parents, they also have these traumas as well, having seen family members get killed and, you know, having lived through a dictatorship, Duvalier. So all of that trauma, you know, when you come here, it still stays with you. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes when you tell your parents you're going back to Haiti, all of that emotion and history comes up. And so my parents, ever since I came here, now I was like, we're never going back. And but for me, you know, I it was important to, like I said, to go back. And when we went back, we got to visit the Citadel in Cap Haitien, where, you know, free Haitian slaves got to make their final stand against Napoleon's army. And it was, you know, it was very emotional. And, you know, I cried like the whole time there. But, you know, I think it's important for us to go back home to see that history and experience Haiti, because a lot of what Haiti's going through is because of that history and because of what we were able to accomplish over 200 years ago. Right. That's why we can't find our independence. And that's why our economy is constantly in chaos and our country is constantly being, you know, foreign powers are constantly playing games with our politics and our people.
Just a quick follow up. But what you're also saying is that, yes, while kidnappings is a reality, it's possible to go and have a honeymoon in Haiti as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Look, when I was in Cap Haitien, I saw a bunch of white people on yachts and having a good time in Labadie. And, you know, the reason why my parents and my father and my family members don't want to go back to Haiti, they don't experience that Haiti. And the news and the press don't tell you about that Haiti, right? And so it was really bizarre to see all of these people that are not from Haiti enjoying the beauties of Haiti. Meanwhile, the press and the media, everyone else is telling you Haiti's a dangerous place to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gary, can I get you back in on the conversation? My fingers are crossed that your phone line will hold up. Anything you want to say in response to what Steve Paul just said? And then, Joanne Lewis, I will get you in on the conversation.
Well, it's interesting hearing Steve talking about the Civil War. It was not a Civil War. It was a coup d'etat. And it felt like a Civil War. And so, yes, to his point that, yeah, Haiti has is a beautiful country. It's in the Caribbean. But the reality is that the people who run Haiti haven't made it equitable for everyone, like you said, for his parents to witness that side of Haiti. Because when you're making, you know, what is like a dollar a day, there's no way you can enjoy the beach. There's no way you can enjoy what Haiti has to offer. And so that's a fundamental problem there, where we usually take something that could be settled at the local level, but we bring it up to the federal level to fix it. And so we have a zero-sum politics and society. It's just all for me, nothing for you. Mm-hmm. And we know that doesn't work. Ultimately, there's no one left. And so that's where we are right now. When, you know, we talk about the media feeding Haiti bad news about Haiti, that's true. And as a journalist, I attest to that. But at the same time, Haiti doesn't help itself as well. And making sure that some of the reasons that make Haiti a news story, they don't exist. For instance, it's 7.2 earthquake. Yes, it's true, but it has a lot of
Yeah, I I got to jump in here only just because we lost him at that very critical moment. Hopefully we can get Gary Pierre back. Again, we're talking to him from Haiti on a phone, so we're hoping that we can reconnect. Let me get Joanne Lewis back, or I should say in on the conversation. I didn't mean to ignore you. Again, she's a nurse practitioner, grew up in Haiti as well, founder of Dr. Joanne Lewis Foundation. What does your foundation do?
Well, our foundation is a nonprofit organization to serve the underserved in the U.S. and in Haiti through programs that improve the quality of health and education and try to improve other social determinants that guide people's lives. Because, as you know, social determinants are conditions that people are born in and live in and work in and worship in. And that brings out why Haiti is in the state that it is, because we're in a state right now that it's very unsafe for many people, and that's why there are so many migrants trying to escape to come into the U.S. And it's not just Haitian migrants, it's migrants from other places. I saw Border Patrol open up their arms to welcome the Cubans in, but for the Haitians, that wasn't the case. And so I'm very happy to be having this conversation today.
Well, we are as well. And frankly, it's one we wanted to do for several weeks. But let me pick up on that and go back to you, Steve Paul. And I'm thinking of that image. I think it's seared into everyone's brain by now of the Border Patrol agents on horseback preventing Haitian migrants from entering the country. It's unclear whether anyone was actually whipped or not, but clearly it was a very disturbing and very powerful image. And I wonder, as a Haitian American yourself and the history of the U.S. treatment of Haitian Americans, what you saw in that photograph.
I mean, I was, my initial reaction was, of course, anger and, immediately really think I was sad for like a few days, and until I was, I turned that anger into like wanting to do something, and we organized a rally in City Hall.
This is in Philly.
Philly. And a lot of us, a lot of immigrant community leaders across the country have been organizing rallies in City Hall. I mean, look, when I saw that image, I think the world saw something already, like a lot of us in the immigrant rights movement already knew, is that this country's immigration laws, it's the way it enforces its borders, is meant to keep Black and brown people out of this country. And so for me, I saw the connection to slavery here, but I also saw a country that basically refuses to recognize the humanity of Black people. And so to treat a person like that who's seeking help and refuge is, of course, absolutely unacceptable. But it was not shocking to me. As someone that works in politics who, the last 4 years was tragic and horrible, the things that were coming out of our president's mouth and the things that we're doing, I was not surprised that despite the administration changing, that this was still the way the immigration was going to be enforced in this country when it came to Black migrants.
Well, when you look at various presidents, Republicans and Democrats over the last, let's say, 30, 40, 50 years, the policy essentially stays the same.
Absolutely. Well, it's crazy because when the coup d'etat happened in the 90s and people were fleeing, Coast Guards were actually turning them away in the middle of the sea, even though there was people being murdered and the it was political unrest, right? And if you were lucky enough to not get turned away by the Coast Guard, you were locked up in Guantanamo Bay. And it was also the 90s when they tried to blame Haitians for HIV. And so now if they use HIV as an excuse not to let Haitian people in. And you see that similarity right now, right, with Title 42, where the U.S. government essentially is using COVID-19 as an excuse not to give folks an opportunity to seek asylum in this country.
Joanne, let me get you back in on the conversation. Anything you want to add to that? And I know you've been working with a young woman who got separated, I guess, from her family, trying to get her some kind of protected status here in the Philadelphia area. What can you tell us?
Well, what I can tell you is that this is extremely tragic. We have migrants that traveled with, so this young lady, she was 17 when she was traveling with her parents and her two siblings. She turned 18 along the way. And so when she arrived to Texas, they separated her from her family, sent her to a detention center in Louisiana. And this is where she is right now. We've been trying to get assistance to get her released to her family, who is now in Philadelphia. We've been helping this family. And it's very difficult to get any type of assistance. Now, I've been doing outreach work for a very long time. I've helped many communities. And it's been very easy for us to get free legal aid for different groups of people, and as we should. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't, but I'm just saying that there needs to be some form of equity. How could it be that for Afghans, we just had a major parade in Upper Darby, welcoming them, bringing them supplies, where for Haitians, we're turning them away? Everyone has to open up their eyes to the disparities that's involved with this. And so it's not just this family. We have other families that we are also helping. We need legal assistance. We need for immigration to be fair and equitable. And I'm very glad that you have Steve Paul on the line, because he's been very instrumental in the community and trying to open up everyone's eyes to what's going on. And also Josephus Dasis, I don't know if he's also on, to they have been very instrumental in getting some kind of media oversight in all of this, because without media pressure, it seems like nothing will get done. And people are suffering.
And people are suffering. Let me go back to you, Gary Pierre-Pierre. You're in Haiti. I'd be curious about how you see U.S. immigration policy from that perspective.
So people...
I hate to do this. I got to jump in here, and I have to thank Gary Pierre-Pierre for joining us, but we just can't seem to reconnect with a good phone line. So thank you to Gary Pierre-Pierre. Again, he's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, founder and publisher of the Haitian Times, and he got our conversation started talking about what's happening currently in Haiti as we speak. You can join our conversation. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can pick up the phone and give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. And again, talking with Steve Paul, Pennsylvania State Director at State Innovation Exchange and Haitian American Voice Board member. Also with us, Joanne Lewis. She's a nurse practitioner, founder of Dr. Joanne Lewis Foundation. Both of them live and work here in the Philadelphia area. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Let me read a comment from Jay, and actually see if I want to toss this to you. He says, I was surprised to learn that Haiti was required to pay compensation to France in the 20th century because of the supposed loss of French value due to the 1790 Haitian Revolution. Has there been any movement to force France to give that money back? Do you have an answer for Jay?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for that. Haiti has... In my opinion, we are the only nation and only people who've actually had to pay our perpetrators, the criminals, back reparation, right? After brutal slave regime in Haiti, the slavery in Haiti in particular was very brutal in the island when Columbus came to the island and through genocide decimated the indigenous population of Haiti. And brought in Africans to replace those folks that they had essentially murdered. But the conditions were so brutal in Haiti that the people that were kidnapped from Africa and then came to Haiti within 3 years rised up and actually fought the European powers and were able to win their freedom. And after battling with France and other foreign powers and winning their freedom, they were forced to pay France reparation, which is, I think, in the billions of dollars for a new nation, right?
And this was in the early 1800s.
Yeah, 1804, we went on independence, and then France came back and said, if you don't pay us for the lost revenue of slaves, we will invade and continue to invade. Wow. And not only did that happen, but the United States also enforced and refused to recognize Haiti's independence. And creating a decades-long embargo in Haiti, choking our economy. So not only did we have to pay this monetary fund to France, but we had no means to do it because we couldn't trade with the rest of the world. And that's the only time in history that a criminal was paid for its crimes.
Wow. Wow. Joanne, you wanted to add, you mentioned the word embargo. Go ahead.
No, what I wanted to add, and actually Steve was on the right track, is that the U.S. also enforced an embargo on Haiti. And so... Aristide, when he was president, was the first president that said, that demanded that France repay that all of that money back that we paid. And just imagine back then in the 1800s, we paid that in gold. When the U.S. Invaded Haiti, the first thing that they did was take more gold from Haiti. I don't even, anyway, that's, let me just stop right there. That seems domain. I'm more with the social aspect of what's going on with
I
the
hear
migrants.
You. So. I hear you. But I think it's important. We have to understand the history of Haiti and the history of the relationship between the United States and Haiti. Hopefully, Steve, that helps us understand a little bit of what is happening now and what role the U.S., if any. I mean, maybe hands-off is the way to go. I don't know. There's been so much intervention in the past.
Yeah, I don't. For me, foreign intervention has not helped Haiti at all, right? We've had 120-plus NGOs operating in Haiti for decades. We've had the United States, nothing happens in Haiti without the U.S. actually okaying it and having an influence. Like, I just want your audience to be clear on that. The conditions of Haiti is, I agree with the listen, Pierre earlier that we as Haitian Americans have a responsibility, but the truth is the American government, we deserve reparations and our people should not be getting deported. What they should be getting is reparation. And because like, you know, like Dr. Joanne started to say earlier, this is not, the United States has invaded Haiti multiple times. In 1915, when they first invaded Haiti, it basically decimated like any organizing that was going on against imperialism. It privatized all of the companies in Haiti when they invaded in the early 90s, the Clintons. They took tariffs off of Arkansas rice and brought in, flooded Haiti with a bunch of cheap rice, which decimated farmers in Haiti and our independence to be able to grow our own food. So the United States has continuously intervened in Haiti for the benefits of rich people here and for the benefits of controlling Haitian politics and Haitian people. And so those people are fleeing because of all of those issues, right? Not just because of the earthquakes, but because of the conditions that the United States has left Haiti in. Those people are fleeing, seeking refuge in the country that has caused a problem to their homeland. So yeah, it's just very sad. And the fact that they're getting deported without even being able to hear their legal cases, why they're seeking refuge, is unlawful. So,
well, let's take a very short break. Joanne, can you stay with us for a little bit more?
Sure.
Okay, fair enough. That's Dr. Joanne Lewis, also with us, Steve Paul, talking about Haiti and U.S.-Haiti relations. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, and if you're just joining us, we're talking about Haiti and America. We've been talking about the various crises in Haiti, and also it's frankly, tangled relationship with the United States from its founding 200 years ago until today. And again, talking with Steve Paul, he is Pennsylvania State Director at State Innovation Exchange, also a board member of Haitian American Voice, came to America when he was a young boy. Also with us, Joanne Lewis. She's a nurse practitioner, founder of Dr. Joanne Lewis Foundation, also came to the U.S. when she was a young girl. And you can join us by sending us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can pick up the phone and give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Steve Paul, you were saying earlier that when sort of U.S. sends troops or maybe sends money or sends NGOs or maybe even missionaries, that has not solved whatever Haiti's problems are.
Yeah, I just, you know, I don't think so. When I was in Haiti in the 90s, when the coup d'etat first started, right, I think a lot of people were relieved to see Clinton invade Haiti and send soldiers there. Right. People were dying. People were getting killed in the streets. And so that was a relief to a lot of people. And that honestly, you know, in a way saved my life. And I was able to come here because things started to kind of calm down.
Right.
But after that, what Clinton then did do was seek to control the Haitian economy for his own benefit and for his rich donors and folks back home. So whenever the thing is, whenever the U.S. gets involved in Haitian politics or Haiti in general, it is never to benefit the Haitian people. And I think that's been proven. Clinton recently apologized for his foreign policy in Haiti admitting that it was the wrong thing to do. And it actually, in fact, decimated of Haiti's ability to grow its own food and be independent. And so I'm always skeptical of any foreign intervention from the United States. I mean, after the 2010 earthquake, we got $13 billion from the world. For your viewers might know, right? The Red Cross had $500 million. They built like 3 houses, right? So whenever it's NGOs and government, it's never for the best interest of Haiti. It's for contractors. It's for business elites. It's never for the people.
Well, let me pick up on that and go to you, Joanne Lewis. And what we heard from Gary Pierre-Pierre was saying, look, Haitian Americans, and I guess, you know, other Americans, there are things to do. But I guess the idea is to empower people who know Haiti best, which are the people living on the ground, not necessarily the elites or, you know, the politically well-connected, or in this case now, obviously, these gangs that are terrorizing so many of the people in Haiti.
Right. And so he makes a very good point that Haitians have to help themselves, okay? And so there are many of us in the diaspora in the United States and across the world that have been putting our heads together and trying to help Haiti. But it's also going to take Haitians in Haiti to also rise up and help themselves. Now, there's suppression going on also, and they can't rise up. Other governments, and I can't say which ones, that seize parts, have actually supported corrupt government in Haiti that have enabled gangs to take over to the point that if we send anything to Haiti, it gets intercepted. We have a school in Haiti. We can't even get supplies to the school because they are controlling everything in Haiti. I have not been to Haiti since 2018 on my missionary work because at this point, everyone knows Dr. Joanne. And so as soon as I step off the plane, I'm afraid that I'm going to get kidnapped in my own country. And this has all been supported by a foreign government. And I do understand that there has been a lot of interventions in Haiti and a lot of U.S. aid pouring into Haiti. But as Steve said, the Red Cross collected $50 million for the earthquake. 6 homes were built. Okay, Steve, you were wrong. It wasn't 3, it was 6. So it's just so ridiculous. And we have a lot of NGOs, yes, but what are they doing? A lot of these NGOs, their children are going to school for free. They are enjoying the beaches and not much is getting done. Now, there are a lot of people doing some work, such as in El Paso right now, there are some priests, some churches that are opening their doors to some of these migrants. And I want to continue to shine the light on the migrant situation, because what happens is after they move the thousands of migrants from under the bridge and the media spotlight is not on the government anymore, we have forgotten that there are still many people suffering. There were women who were pregnant, they were traveling. There were women having babies under this bridge. There are children separated from their parents at this time that are in different parts of the country, where some of the parents are in Philadelphia and some of the children are somewhere in Louisiana or somewhere in Florida. We can't reconnect those families. So we just want more attention to be paid to the fact that this is a tragedy and something has to be done about it.
Let me pick up on the comparison, Steve Paul, between migrants or refugees from Haiti versus Cuba. If you're a Cuban refugee and you can get, you know, you're literally your foot on land in the United States, the country opens up to you. For Haitians, we have spent untold amounts of money to keep Haitians off and away.
Yeah, I mean, this is a country that's locked up millions of black people in prisons all over the country, right? We have the highest incarcerated population in the world. And so it's no surprise. It shouldn't be any surprise to folks that when Haitians were fleeing bad conditions in the 90s, instead of giving them refuge at the same time where Cubans were fleeing and were given refuge, we built detention centers and we locked them up in Guantanamo Bay. So Excuse me.
Let me just underscore that, because people might not know that Haitians were detained in Guantanamo Bay.
Yes, they were. The Coast Guard either sent them back to Haiti, or locked them up in Guantanamo Bay in prison in shackles as and someone seeking asylum, which should never be done. Meanwhile, when Cubans at the same time were fleeing, if you could get here on land, then you were able to like have your asylum case heard. That speaks to the fact that, again, this country, our immigration system is rooted in anti-blackness. And so it shouldn't be a surprise that, you know, at the same time where we talk the war and drug was going on and a lot of our black folks in the communities were being locked up, black immigrants were also being treated the same way as criminals for seeking asylum and refuge in this country. And that continues till this day. And this is what you're seeing play out in these borders. The fact that a 17, 18 year old, instead of being reunited there with their families, is currently in a prison in Louisiana.
This is the teenage girl we've been talking about.
Yes. Yep. And you know, and Dr. Jordan is correct. Like, after they cleared the bridge within days of the incident happening with the person being whipped by someone on a horseback, they cleared out the bridge because they no longer wanted the media attention. They knew that the situation was going to escalate, right? But since then, more than like 70 flights have left for Haiti. The Biden administration continues to deport people. And so this is a continuing situation that we have to continue to hold the Biden administration accountable. That's why we're asking for him to immediately stop deporting people to Haiti, to Port-au-Prince. A country, by the way, just recently as May, the Department of Homeland Security was saying was in no condition to take people back. And so they were extending temporary protective status for Haitians who were currently here in this country because of the continued human rights abuse that was continuing to escalate because of the assassination, because of all those natural disasters. Those folks weren't ready to go back. And then what changed between May and July?
What do you think it was?
15,000 black people showed up to the border and they wanted to send them back.
As kind of simple, straightforward as that, you think?
I think it's as we have the so like right like a lot of people have the Biden administration continues to use Title 42 and COVID-19 as their excuse for not letting these people even seek asylum. Dr. Fauci
and Title 42 says is applied to people seeking refugee status related to COVID.
COVID-19, correct. Okay. Because we're still in the midst of a global pandemic, we can't let these people in for our own safety, so we're going to just send them back. And they've been using that to send people back when they come to the border seeking asylum. A lot of healthcare professionals have said that this is not even like keeping us safe. But for me, my argument is that we have all the resources. We have all these vaccines we're throwing away all the time. We have procedures to keep people safe and do testing and quarantine. We have the ability to be compassionate and actually let these people, 15,000 people seek asylum if they wanted to. And I think Dr. Joanne pointed, right? We spend billions of dollars welcoming our Afghan brothers and sisters, rightfully so.
Rightfully so
after what we did to their country, right? And this is a thing, this is a constant pattern of American foreign policy going in around the world into people's countries, messing it up, and then saying, hands off, sorry about that, right? So we were right to help those Afghan folks come to this country, and we want the same thing for the Haitians.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Steve Paul, and he is a board member of Haitian American Voice. Also with us, Joanne Lewis. She's nurse practitioner, founder of Dr. Joanne Lewis Foundation, and we are talking about Haiti and the United States. And as always on Radio Times, we want to hear from you. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can pick up the phone and give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Joanne Lewis, let me go back to you and just to hear how you came to the United States as a young girl. When was that?
So I came to the United States in 1974. I was 7 years old at the time. And fortunately for me, my mother sent for us. She left me in Haiti when I was a baby in the care of my aunt. Fortunately, I was able to get on an American Airlines flight and come to this country and had a welcoming mother waiting for me. That is not the case for a lot of people. And it's not just Haitians. I think America is a beacon of light that everyone is looking for. So we have migrants from all over the world trying to get to America. And for myself, coming here from Haiti, of course, it was a foreign country. I was a child. I didn't know a word of English, but it provided me with the opportunity to obtain a bachelor's, obtain a master's, obtain a doctorate, work professionally in great institutions, which I shall not name right now, and have a successful career in life. This is all that people are seeking. And America should embrace that, and not just embrace it for some, but embrace it for all. Now, don't get us wrong, and I'm sure that Steve will agree with me when I say that we are not saying that thousands of migrants should come to the country all at once, because no one is prepared for that. But you have to look at the situation. You have to look at the circumstances of what's going on, where they are. And if the United States wants to help, then put some interventions in place. So help them put a government in place, because after all, we had three occupations already from the U.S. With each occupation, the country was not left in a better position. So at this point, this is when the U.S. really needs to help put a government in place, help to build the healthcare system, help to build the educational system so that people will not try to flee anymore, but will try to live in their own countries. Right now, people are fleeing and need the assistance right now.
Let me just remind our listeners that you're listening to Radio Times, and we're talking about Haiti and America with Joanne Lewis and Steve Paul. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Let me pick up on what Joanne Lewis was saying, but also what Gary Pierre was saying as well, which is a lot of middle-class people are leaving Haiti. Maybe they're in the Dominican Republic. Maybe they're going to another country. Maybe they're trying to get into the United States. So then you're left with what's ever left, I guess, of the very wealthy, and then people who are desperately poor. What can be done to support a middle class in Haiti?
Well, I think, you know, I think Pierre and Dr. Joanne was like kind of hinting at this. I think the way Haiti moves forward is not by U.S. intervention. I think Haiti truly needs the independence it was seeking when it fought against slavery in 1804. And so we should just let the Haitian people chart their own course and towards the future. And so I've been hearing lately, you know, since the kidnappings of the missionaries, like folks calling for U.S. intervention. I just don't think that's the solution. Haiti should be able to seek out its own partners, its own coalition, its own economic partners, and that is the way Haiti is going to make it through this, because decades of U.S. intervention and NGOs has not worked for us. And I will say, to Dr. Joanne's point earlier, I do think the American people, the United States has a responsibility to the refugee, to the migrants that are coming to the border. And I think we have the resources, which has been shown with the resettlement of the Afghan refugees. If we have the political will, we do have the resources to actually allow these people and to seek the refuge. I don't think it's a scarcity issue. I just think it's a political issue.
And do you think it's a racial issue?
I absolutely think it's a racial issue. Yes. This country has a history of using immigration laws to maintain white supremacy. I mean, folks, your listeners will remember, like, right when there was a point where we had Japanese and detention centers, right? Like, there was a point where we had a quota system, only Europeans could come in. So this is not a thing that's just unique to this moment, but this is a pattern in a history of using our immigration laws to keep black and brown folks out.
We're almost out of time here, but are you hopeful? Are you agnostic on sort of where things go from here for Haiti?
I think if I'm hopeful of anything, I think I'm hopeful of the energy that I see in the immigrant rights movement that's happening right now. You know, I would encourage your listeners to, like, you know, check out the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, the Haitian Bridge Alliance. Folks are mobilizing and organizing for a long time, you know, for a lot of reasons that we all talked about. It's been hard to get Haitian folks to get politically engaged in American politics, because politics has a bad taste for us. But I think this moment has made us recognize, like, in order for home to be safe and for Haiti to become what we want it to be, we have to be involved in United States politics. So that's encouraging.
Well, we got to leave it there. Steve Paul, thank you for coming in. Thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me. Thank you for covering this issue.
Absolutely. And he is a board member of Haitian American Voice. Dr. Joanne Lewis, thank you for joining us on Radio Times as well.
Okay, you take care. Thank you so very much.
You're very welcome. And she's a nurse practitioner, founder of Dr. Joanne Lewis Foundation. And we began with Gary Pierre-Pierre, founder and publisher of the Haitian Times. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder and Paige Murray-Bessler. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.